Good morning, and welcome back to the Simmons Car Care Talk Show. This is Brian from Automotive Specialists, better known as Mr. Test First Don't Guess. Good morning, and now that we probably thoroughly confused you as to what's going on here, Jerry's on his way to the airport. I'm going to fill in for him on the second half of this hour. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Brian. How's it going today?
Well, you guys got me out of bed this morning. That's for dang sure.
That's all right. That's all right. You probably need to get out of bed. get up and get rolling. It's going to be a good day, Brian. I bet there's all kinds of work that can be done today. So look at this.
There is.
You're welcome, Brian. You're welcome. Well, you don't have to thank
me. Yeah, I'll tell you
anymore.
What. There is plenty to do. That is for sure, for sure. Weather's changing. We all know that. It's going to be about, 80 degrees today. And then we'll cool off probably for the last time this year, because the next go-around, I'm sure the 90s and 100s will be back.
Oh, yeah. They'll be back with a vengeance. You know they will, Brian.
Yeah, and that being said, all the things that you've been procrastinating about, like the little drip from the antifreeze, the cooling system, or any other leaks, they'll come on with a vengeance. The heat irritates everything, from your cooling systems to your engine oil leaks to batteries. Anytime there's like a 50-degree swing, you see all these little problems just pop up. It happens all the time. Once in the early summer and once in the early winter. It seems like all these little problems are just aggravated with your car. And we see a huge influx in, repairs that need to be done immediately instead of, you could have done them earlier, which we call preventive maintenance, that we push all the time, it's either preventive maintenance or breakdown repairs. So it's your choice, We can tell you all day long. We can tell you every weekend to prevent maintenance. But if you don't do that, then you're going to get the alternative. Isn't that so, Jim?
That is absolutely, absolutely true, folks. If you can either, like I said before, you can either be on the prevent the maintenance program or you can be on the preventative maintenance program. I mean, I know they're similar words, but if you go on the we're out to prevent the maintenance, it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time. And feel free, folks, it is a live call-in talk show this morning, 520-719-1490, 520-719-1490, if you want to chime on in with us here. But Brian's absolutely right. If you got to think about preventing the maintenance. If you don't do preventive maintenance, what the repercussions are. And, here's the other thing. Like Jerry and I were talking about this in the last hour. You don't know what the other guy has done. So if you're going down the road and you've decided to not check your brakes or not work on your brakes, or maybe your brakes, they don't feel right, correct? Maybe they're a little spongy, or maybe they just don't – they're not normal. For some reason, they just don't feel right. And so when an emergency situation comes up and you can't stop, there's going to be a crash. And there's going to be an emergency situation because the guy next to you hasn't done it. Why hasn't he done it? Well, because you know why he didn't do it? Because he wanted to eat. Because freaking inflation's through the roof. Because he decided to put food on his table and pay his electric bill versus putting brakes on his car. He made a conscious decision. The problem is that you get to deal with his conscious decision for not fixing his car. So your car needs to be extra better to make sure that when an emergency situation arises, that you can handle the situation that's going to come up. So if there's a situation where a guy has a vehicle and he runs through a red light because he can't stop, and your brakes are a little questionable, well, then there's going to be a problem. On the other hand, if you went to the trouble to do your job, you might have avoided that situation. And, folks, I see it all the time. And Brian can tell you, if you don't want to see those situations, just do a little bit of work on that stuff. I know, trust me, folks, it's not cheap, but you know, the repercussions are significantly more expensive. And like Brian says, if you decide the guy with the tires from last hour, the guy with the tires just blew me away. If you think that not changing the oil is a good idea, well, you know, think about buying a motor. Is that a good idea? I mean, Brian will sell you a motor. Okay? You know, he'll tell you that you should have changed your oil, but he'll sell you a motor. When you get down to it, and you find out that the motor replacement, what on today's cars, Brian, what are they, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 if I take you the whole job?
That would be for a used known good. We're doing one right now in a 2004 Yukon. It's a 5.3. And I mean, the problem is some of these motors you can't even buy today. I mean, 2 weeks ago we went and did a Hemi in a Dodge pickup truck, and we couldn't buy one from Jasper because they didn't have the parts to build one. So we were lucky enough that you couldn't buy one from Jasper. They didn't have the parts to build one. So I said, well, we've got a problem. And, you know, I says, well, I called Jasper because I figured, well, the dealer, you know, Dodge isn't going to have one. They don't have one hardly ever. Well, so I called Jasper, and they didn't. And they didn't have a release date. And then, I called the dealer, Dodge, and lo and behold, they had one. It was 4 or 5 days out, but they had one available. So, yay, you know, we got to sell a new motor. But, I mean, expensive, very expensive. And, you know, you rely back to this Yukon that we're doing right now. I mean, the customer had to go with a used known good, which he was lucky enough to find a motor that only had about 40,000 miles on it. But other than that, the only used known good motors out there, you know, would have 120,000, 150,000 miles on it. And that particular motor with the cylinder deactivation system on it, usually after 100,000 miles and the neglect that it gets put through because people don't change their oil, usually those motors are no good after 100,000 miles. But still, yeah, I mean, you're looking at $6,000 for used known good, and that's parts, labor, all the other things that go along with it. Because you got to realize, you know, you've got this thing all taken apart, okay? You don't know the history on it. What are you going to do? Are you going to replace the water pump? Of course. It makes sense. It's off. You know, are you going to do the belts? Unless if they're brand new, you probably should. Are you going to do the hoses? They're off. You probably should. You know, in the spark plugs and the thermostat and the cooling system, you know, the antifreeze, the engine oil filters, you combined all these things on top of that motor and the labor to remove and install it, yeah, you've got a huge bill. And, you know, it all gets back to what we preach all the time, the maintenance. If you change your engine oil on a regular basis, and I don't mean 10,000 miles, I recommend 3,000 miles on regular paraffin-based oil, in no more than 5 on synthetic. If you do that faithfully, these things will run and run and run. Because like I've said before, there's only two ways to kill that motor. Well, not change your engine oil, run it out of oil. There's three ways. Or run it out of antifreeze. There's your three ways to kill a motor. So which would you rather? I've always said, which would you rather have? You know, I mean, you go back to my 97 GMC, that thing was pushing 200,000 miles, original motor. It did get one transmission in that period of time. But as far as the rest of the truck goes, the front differential, the rear differential, the transfer case, all of those things, you know, they were maintained. And they're still going to this day with 250K on it. So which would you rather have? You know, like my diesel truck. Every 30,000, 35,000 miles, I change every single fluid in it. Every single one. And I hick and scream because, let me tell you, those are all synthetic oils, and it is expensive. I mean, you're talking about a great big differential that holds about 4 quarts of synthetic oil. A transfer case, again, synthetic oil. Front differential, again, synthetic oil. Transmission, again, synthetic oil. Engine oil, synthetic. Not to mention the cooling system that holds over 4 gallons of antifreeze. It's a huge bill on a diesel to change all the fluids. But I do it at every 30, 35,000 miles, and why? That's the last truck I'll ever have. It'll last forever because I maintain it. Something to be said for that. I mean, if you don't take care of these things, they will bite you. They'll bite you hard.
And you know,
again,
this
live call in today, you can call in at 719-1490. That's 719-1490. This is Brian from Automotive Specialist, better known as Mr. Test First Don't Guess on Ina Road. What were you going to say there, Jim?
Oh, you know, you're talking about changing all the fluids. You know, if you've done a run diesel trucks, it's a whole different animal. I mean, yeah, they still have oil, and they still have, you know, differential fluid, and they have transmission fluid. But there's a lot of things about diesels that are different. You know, when Brian talks about, you know, the 4 gallons of coolant, coolant is a lifeblood to, on top of oil, is a lifeblood to a diesel motor. So in today's motors with DEF, which, you know, is Brian's favorite, he'll tell you how much he loves DEF systems. He'll go on for hours about how fantastic they are and how he loves maintaining DEF systems. But not to mention EGR coolers. So in a normal car motor, there's, you know, since the 70s, they've had, you know, EGR, which is exhaust gas recirculation. And what happens is, you don't know this, or maybe you do, you know, I'm just assuming you do know it, but we'll go over it anyways. A little bit of exhaust gas gets sucked out of the exhaust, and it gets ran back through the motor, so that the nitrous oxide emissions are lessened. Okay? Folks, I don't know if you know this, but when you suck exhaust gas into your motor, it's not clean. It's full of all kinds of nasty things, carbon, you know, from the motor, hydrocarbons of unburnt fuel, dirty air. I mean, you'd think that you'd need an air filter on it. If you said that you're going to put dirty air into a motor intentionally, you'd think you'd be crazy, right? But we do it every day. We do it every day for the sake of emissions. We've been doing it for 50 years. So on a diesel, they do the same thing, less now, but they still do it. So you suck exhaust gas back into the motor to reduce the nitrous oxide emissions. Urea is supposed to help cure this, but it they still do it. So there's a device on a diesel truck. It's called an EGR cooler. Right? Sometimes they're big and long, sometimes they're littler, but coolant runs through them. And it runs through them, and it cools the exhaust, in theory, right? So that, you know, the 8,000 degree exhaust doesn't go into your motor, right? Still, it's still nasty, dirty. So what happens is that coolant wears out, and the coolant the cooler itself begins to fail. Now, Brian can tell you this all day long. The tolerance in a diesel motor is zero. If you put water in a diesel motor at 18-to-1 compression ratio, something's going to bend. Something's going to break. And what happens is you can't see it, but you can on a scan tool, or you can with a scope, not necessarily a scan tool, but you can see it on a power balance or a cylinder cutout test, but you'll have a miss. And it'll always be diagnosed as an exhaust, as an injector miss. Oh, it's just an injector that went bad. Nope, injectors are firing fine. Oh, it must be fuel pump. That must be fuel pressure. Nope, it's all good. No, you know what it is? The bent connecting rod, because the water doesn't compress, and the water between the piston and the head bends the rod. Now, you can't even tell it unless you take the head off and you line it up, and you see at top dead center, you can see, put a micrometer on there, and you can see it down just enough to drop your compression ratio from maybe 18-to-1 down to 13-to-1, and that'll kill it on a diesel right there. Never, it'll always be dead. Or if you don't bend the connecting rod, you crack a head. You'll crack a head and or blow the gasket. But have seen the bent connecting rod on the Dodges, on the Cummins, I should say. So you got to be really, really careful when you're talking about, oh, well, it costs a lot to put in 4 gallons of antifreeze and flush it out and do it right. Because 4 gallons, folks, let me just tell you real quick. 4 gallons of antifreeze, which let's say, you know, you go and buy wherever, you buy your Prestone or, you know, you buy your good antifreeze, right? Red, green, whatever color goes in that thing. Could be blue, you know, it could be the Asian blue, you know, if you're driving. Could be, there's a bunch of different colors, right? Could be, but you get, let's say, let's go with red because that's what we're going to use today. We're going to use red antifreeze. You buy 4 gallons of red antifreeze and it's $20 a gallon. Which maybe that's highway robbery. So it's $80. You pull it out, you drain it out on the ground, you put the new coolant in, and you go, $80. A head for a Dodge costs about $4,000 to get a reman head for a Dodge Cummins 6.7. It's about $4,000. That's just for the head. Oh, wait. Now what do you need? Oh, you need head bolts because they're all bent. They're all sprung. Oh, you need it. Oh, you're gonna do a connecting rod in a Dodge? Oh, you're going to pull the motor out of that puppy because you're not pulling a connecting rod out of the motor and thinking you're going to get the connecting rod by the crankshaft just enough, hopefully, if it's got a piston pin that's held in with snap rings and not a press in. Because if it's a press in, it's all over but the crying. You're going to do it the old school way. You're going to pull the pan off. You're going to rotate the crank out of the way. You're going to pull the piston down, knock the pin out of the connecting rod, put the new rod in, put it back in, and go. And you're going to try that. I've seen it done. I've seen it done on big trucks. I wouldn't recommend it. I've seen it done. You get a bent connecting rod in the motor, Dodge motor, I don't know, $14,000, $16,000. Because the coolant wasn't changed and the EGR cooler failed, and you get to buy a motor. And it happens all the time. White smoke comes rolling out of there. And maybe you'll be lucky. Maybe it won't happen that way. But I've seen it. I've towed them. I've been to the guy's shops and looked at them. Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah, Rod's bent. And you bend a rod in a diesel, you know what kind of stress it puts on the crankshaft? It's not easy. It's not like it's light-duty stuff. We're talking heavy-duty equipment here. And you bend the connecting rod? Maybe they bend so that you don't break the crank. I don't know. But last time I checked, diesel crankshafts are pretty friggin' tough. They have to they go for 200,000, 300,000 miles if they're maintained. So 500,000 miles on a lot of them. You know, 500,000 miles, never did anything. You know, and you're not on a Cummins 6.7. It's not rebuildable like in a big truck where you can pull the liners out and put new ones in. You get to buy the whole motor, or have it rebuilt, and that is highly expensive because $80 in coolant was just too much, and those things are really, really detrimental. I mean, am I wrong, Brian? Did I misspeak?
Yeah, I mean, it's right back to, you know, what we say, the preventive maintenance. You need to do it. I mean, it's so much cheaper to prevent than it is to do the major repair. You know, and again, like I always say, which would you rather have? Which one? You know, but I tell you, today, I'm seeing a larger percentage of people doing this preventive maintenance. I see that they're listening to us. They're coming in. They're getting their 60,000-mile service done. They're getting their inspections done with their 3,000-mile, you know, oil change interval or 5,000-mile intervals. You know, it all gets back to that oil change and that inspection. With that inspection, we can advise you as to what things you may have coming up. That's why it is so important. Hey, you know, we can say, hey, that transmission fluid's supposed to be bright red. It's starting to turn a hue of brown. You might want to think about getting that done. You know, it isn't that you just wait until that 60,000-mile service or 100,000-mile service. It's you go with the inspections and the report back to you of the condition of these fluids. You change these fluids when they start to turn a color of any other color than what they were when they were new. Thus, like I said, transmission fluid, bright red. If it's starting to turn brown, it's time to start thinking about it, you know? I say this all the time, and I'll pick on my daughter's Honda CR-V. I pick on that little car all the time. It's a great car. I'm not trying to say that it's a bad little car, but the thing is I had done all the maintenance on that vehicle for 10 years, okay? And in the end, we ended up buying it, and I gave it to my daughter. But before I gave it to her, I said, let's check all these fluids. Now, I'm going to tell you that looks can be deceiving because I checked the transmission fluid in it, and it was red. It was a little bit dark red. But I looked in the history, and this is the cool thing because I had all the history to refer back on all the maintenance that had been done to this thing, every single solitary bit of it. And the previous owner did take care of this vehicle, and we did all the services on it. But I looked back, and it was about 30,000 miles since the transmission oil had been changed. I said to myself, self, even though it's red, we're going to change it. Well, I hook up the transmission fluid flush machine, which on the front of that machine, it has a glass bar that I can see the condition of the fluid that's coming out of that transmission. Lo and behold, we started to flush that thing, and that oil was black. So after seeing that, I mean, I am full on going to recommend to anyone to get that transmission fluid flush at about 30,000 miles because it's going to be black. Even though when you remove the dipstick out of the thing, it may have a pretty decent hue of red. So, like I say, looks can be deceiving. There's certain intervals that these things need to be done. Now, if you do these things at those intervals, like I do with my diesel and my other vehicles, what's the reward? Vehicle's going to last forever. I don't have to go out and buy a new $100,000 diesel truck because I'm going to maintain ours, you know. We don't have to go out and buy a $60,000, $70,000 Lariat, a Ford F-150, because why? I'm going to maintain it. Again, which would you rather have? I don't want to buy a new vehicle. A lot of people don't want to buy a new vehicle today. A lot of people today are fixing or maintaining what they have. I've seen a huge influx in the last 2.5 years of people that will come in and say, fix it. I'm not buying a new car. And trust me, they're doing it. They're putting it's a no-brainer for most of these people to put $2,000-$3,000 into their car. Because why? It's much cheaper than buying a new car. Maintain it. Fix it. You know? I mean, I even see people, you know, that say, well, hey, gosh, I really don't have the money to do this. But they own the car. They may go to their credit union or whatever bank they have and get a small loan for, you know, $2,000-$3,000, whatever, to fix their car. Because it's much easier to pay off a very small loan than it is to pay off a brand new car. Not to mention, with a brand new car, you get the luxury of giving the state of Arizona. What's new plates cost today, Jim? $1,000 a year? I know back in 2005, when I bought our diesel, the license plates for that in 2005 was $980 for that first year. I about fell out of my chair.
It's a tough pill, isn't
it? That was in 2005. I don't know what they are today.
Well, it's based on the vehicle, the cost of the vehicle. So the base, what they call the base sticker price, or the FL, the price of the car is. So if you buy a car, if you buy a Chevy pickup truck or a Ford pickup truck, whatever the base model is, that's what they bill it to. So since the base model has went from $30,000 to $60,000. You're right. It costs a lot more. It's $1,250 usually to start on a $60,000 car. $900 on a $45,000 car. And there's no car out there today that doesn't sell start new for $40,000. So that's why when they talk about driving it off the lot, it depreciates. Well, one of the things that's good is at least the registration goes down. But it usually takes a couple of years. But yeah, that initial payment you're going to get is going to be, you know, $1,000. $1,000, you know, that's, what, $80 a month, right? $80 a month? 8 times 12 is 96, so that'd be, you know, $960, so $80 to $90 a month. You know, your insurance is going to cost you, on a new vehicle, it's going to cost you $120 a month. Right? You know, you're $200 a month, and that's just the starting numbers. That didn't put any gas in it. That didn't drive it anywhere. That didn't change the oil. That didn't do anything. $120 a month for it to sit in your garage on a brand new car. $120 a month just for it to sit there, to stall feed it. We call that stall feeding because it sits in the stall, and it doesn't go anywhere. That's a lot of money. $200 a month just for it to stay in your garage. That doesn't include the tires. That doesn't include anything you do. That is, like I said, no gas, no oil, no water, nothing. $200 a month. Just for it to stay in your garage or in your house or in front of your house, you know. And that's a pretty, if you haven't thought about that when you're buying a car, well, that's something to think about. Because if it's $200 a month minimum, I mean, I could be way off on the insurance. I probably am. You know, it's probably more like $200 a month, but it puts you, you know, $300 a month just to have it, you know. So whatever you're, you know, if you have a bad driving record, your insurance is probably significantly higher. But yeah, so just sitting there, let's say $200, $250 a month just for it to sit at your house and never go anywhere on a new car. How much maintenance can you do on an old car for $250 a month, Brian? I mean, you change a lot of oil for $250 a month.
You can buy a lot of things for
$250 a month, you can do a lot of things, yeah. But those are the real facts, you know. If you wait 2 months, you could buy two tires. At $250 a tire, and that's probably the average cost of a tire today, you know, $250. So, you know, if you look at it from that point of view, there's a lot of things you can do at $250 a month. You could do all kinds of things you can do at $250 a month on a car that, you know, may not be wore out. Now, Brian, you and I both know, we see them all the time. There are some cars that, you know, just need to go. You know, maybe they're a problem child. Maybe they're wore out. Maybe somebody abused them to pieces, and, you know, repairing them comes to the point in time it's just so expensive to get it back to where it's a good running, reliable car then it's just not worth it. Or maybe the pain just isn't worth it. You know, Brian, I'm sure you've seen them. Those cars that you just
I see it all the time. I mean,
I'm sure you do.
You know, when it gets to that point, it's just that the vehicle has been so neglected that where do you start? You know, where do you start with trying to call it restore this thing back to, you know, perfect running condition? Yeah, I see it from time to time, and unfortunately, there are times where I have to tell the customer, look, you need all these repairs, and it's just not worth it. It just doesn't make sense, because not to mention the things that are needed immediately, there are other things lurking in the shadows that we can see that are going to come to haunt you in the future. And, you know, there's times where I say it just doesn't make sense. But then again, other times, you know, it does make sense to fix the car. You know, it does make sense to remove the cylinder heads and repair the head gaskets, replace the head gaskets and everything that goes along with it. You know, there's times that that does make sense because the rest of the vehicle is in really good shape. It all gets right back to that inspection. When you go in for your service, it needs to be inspected bumper to bumper, and we need to report back to you the condition of that vehicle bumper to bumper. It has to be done. You know, there's more to an oil change than just taking the drain plug out, draining the oil, taking the filter off, and putting a new filter on and filling it back up and closing the hood. There's way more to it than that. You have to inspect the rest of the vehicle and address the things that are possibly needed or upcoming or planning for the upcoming. That's how you can budget for these things. It's which would you rather have? Having the ability to budget for it, or having the problem with, hey, this thing's broken, you need to fix it right now. And you may not have the money to fix it right now. That's why I say it all goes back to that inspection. You need to go to a quality repair facility and stick with them so you can build a history. That's the key. Building a history on your vehicle. That's what we do with all our customers. We've been doing it for 28 years. Building a history for you and your vehicle, keeping record of it, so I can constantly go backwards and look at what things have been done and what has not. Every time you come into our shop, I'm doing that. I'm looking at the history of your vehicle and all the things that have been done. From there, we can look forward, and with the inspection, we can advise as to what is needed and what is not. That's why I say, find a good repair facility, stick with them, and continue to go to them all the time. I see people that'll go, you know, jump from shop to shop to shop to shop, and they'll come in and they'll say, my check engine light's on, or I've got this fluid leaking. I said, so what's the history on this vehicle? What's been going on? Well, I don't know. I've been going to shop A, B, C, D, and just, you know, taking the cheapest way out to get whatever done. They have no idea what's been done to the vehicle. That's a huge problem. You need to have documentation as to what's been going on with this thing so you can make a logical decision on what to do going forward. And that's why you stick with the same repair facility. And that's why we've got so many customers that come to us and believe in us, and we take care of their cars. And they greatly appreciate that. Trust me.
No, you're absolutely right, Brian. It's really tough to diagnose a vehicle when you have no idea what's been diagnosed. And of course, you know, a guy brings you something and says, "Oh, the check engine light's on, or the flashing light's on." Okay, Well, it looks like this might be the problem. No, I just had that changed. What do you mean you just had it changed? Oh, yeah, brand XYZ just changed that for me. Okay, well, why didn't you go back to them and ask them to do more? Well, because it didn't fix the problem. Well, did you even give them a chance to fix the problem? I mean, you know, they may have diagnosed it, and it was maybe there's some other underlying issue. It's like when you're talking about changing the motor out for a known good used. I can't imagine how many sensors have to be changed or at least inspected on a used motor when you're trying to put it in the back in the vehicle. Because, you know, how do you know that the sensor on that motor, the coolant temp sensor for the ECM or the oil pressure sensor is actually reading right? Good Lord, some days you just can't even, you know, guess at all the things that go wrong. I had one the other day we were working on, and it had a electrical issue. Of course, it's an international, folks, and let me tell you something, internationals have electrical issues. They have tons of them. And you could wiggle a harness, and it would run great, and you could wiggle the harness, and it would not run great. Do you know how hard it is to find a wire in an electrical harness, a loom of about 40 wires, to figure out which one is the broken one? You know, you could jump up and down and guess all you want, but it's dang tough. I can tell you, it's really tough. And they don't necessarily hide themselves in the wide open, you know. Wires that break are inside of a sheath, you know. You can't see them. And now you're testing wire for wire sometimes just to figure this out. So when somebody has done repairs, you don't know what they've done. You have no idea what's taken place. You don't know if they've and that's, I'm not saying it's bad. What I'm saying is that if you have no idea what somebody's done and they've taken a wire and did an overlay. Oh, well, we think this wire was bad, so we clipped one on a new wire here, we clipped it all over there, and we ran a new one to make a bridge, right? Okay. Is that what the problem was? I don't know, but now you're trying to re-diagnose a problem against somebody's repair, which you don't know what they repaired or even what their thought process was for the repair or if the repair was right or wrong. And it could have been a perfectly correct repair, and the problem still existed because, you know, something else came up. It could have been a really bad repair, which, you know, could lead to a whole another set of problems that you don't know. And that's a tough, that makes diagnosing and repairing oh so much longer. And when you're working on new stuff, it's even worse than that. Oh, we towed it into the shop because it wouldn't run. Okay, what do you mean it wouldn't run? Well, it cranked, but it wouldn't start. Oh, okay. Or it started up, but then it shut off. Or it started up and it threw, you know, 43 codes, you know, and they're all emission codes. Great. Well, what's wrong with it? I don't know. You know, it runs okay sometimes. I turn the key off and turn it back on, and it runs fine. That's the one I love. I just cycle the key off and on, and it just goes ahead and runs great after that. Okay. Or I turn off the battery. I disconnected the battery. Turn the battery, put the battery back on. That runs great now. Okay, well, you didn't fix the problem. But, you know, at least it drove out of the road, I guess. You know, it's a tough one. And when you're trying to chase those issues down and not knowing any of the back history, it, like I said, it makes that repair a really, really big challenge. And somebody could perform a repair that you don't know about that could throw all kinds of information to you that will send you on a wild goose chase until you're blue in the face. And you're just like, what the heck? And then finally you figure out what somebody else did, and you undo that, and you're like, oh, hey, there it is. Now I see what's going on. And those are real challenges. And like Brian's talking about, when you get somebody, at least they can go back and look and see and say, okay, last year we did this. All right, okay, let's revisit this, or this is not the problem. So this is what was repaired. This is what the issue was. You know, we solved this issue. There's a new issue, and let's solve this issue. And it's all about detective work. And then if you got to go back in the past and try and figure out what somebody else did, like I said, it takes a lot of time. And Brian, do you have that?
Yeah, I get that all the time. You know, I mean, people will go to the big box store and get their codes read, and, you know, they'll have oxygen sensor codes and or lean codes, and they say, well, let me go buy me one of those oxygen sensors and screw that in. And bam, it doesn't fix the problem. Like I've always said, that's being code dependent. Just because you have a code for a particular part doesn't mean that you need that new part. And again, along with it, where do you buy this part? Do you buy it from the original manufacturer? Do you get it aftermarket? What to do today? I tell you, it's really tough today. Like, we had a 7.3 Ford diesel. It had a code for injector pressure control. Okay. We verified the voltage out to it. There was no signal return. We needed a sensor. Along with it, the connector end that plugs into it, the insulation was all chaffed off, and there was bare wire exposed. So we need a connector also. Now, in the aftermarket world, they have a nice little sensor that comes with the connector. How cool is that? You know, and it's reasonably priced. Well, let's go buy that. This is from a reputable manufacturer that I will not mention, that we've used for years and years and years, and it always has worked. Well, guess what? The first one didn't work. Well, how can this be? It's brand new. It's in the box. I just changed it, and it didn't fix it. Well, this has got to be a fluke, because I've used this manufacturer for years. I mean, for 30 years, I've used this particular manufacturer, and we've never had this problem. Got to be a fluke. So I order another one, same manufacturer, put it on, it didn't work. Are you kidding me? That's two brand new parts. Same manufacturer, didn't work. All right, enough of this nonsense. Call Ford, get the sensor from Ford. It's twice the money. Put it on. It's fixed. Welcome to my world. This is what we're facing today. I get this all the time. It isn't just the Ford. I mean, I've had imports come in. I had a Nissan come in after it got hot. The engine would crank but not start. So this is what we call crank, no start. Let it cool off, engine would start. Huh, what's going on here? It was the crankshaft sensor. It would go open when it was hot. Open meaning not a complete circuit when it was hot. Thus, you'd have signal to it, but no signal return. So when you crank the motor over, it didn't know that it was turning. So thus you have no spark, no injector pulse, no start. So, okay, let's get a new sensor. So I get a new sensor, again, from a reputable company that we've used all the time, 4 years. Put the sensor in. Now it won't start at all. Not cold, not hot. And well, it wouldn't get hot because it wouldn't start when it was cold. Now it started before when it was cold, but it wouldn't start when it was hot. How can this be? You know, the quality control in a lot of these parts today is just gone. And this is something that we never experienced 20 years ago, ever. And I can go on from these sensors to rack and pinions to steering gearboxes. Anymore, it's like I asked Mitch yesterday. I says, why are you going for that really high-end steering gearbox for this Ford? He says, well, I know it's three times the cost, but how many of those other ones from the other manufacturers do you want to install before we get a good one? And I thought, boy, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, I've had more than one vehicle come into the shop where we put a remanufactured steering gearbox on, and it didn't leave the shop because we had to put another one on before we could turn it loose. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this too, Jim. I mean, there's a lot of this going on now.
Well, I'll tell you the one that got me. This is the best one. So these guys I know, they work on these old engines, right? We're talking old engines out of the 20s. You know, they're the what they call the hit and miss, you know? So they're one-cylinder horizontal motors with those big flywheels. You know the kind I'm talking about, right, Brian?
Yeah.
They have a magneto. They do not have a distributor. They don't. They have a magneto that trips from the big flywheel. It has an exhaust rod that pushes the exhaust valve open. It doesn't even have an intake push rod. It has a little valve, little light spring, so when the cylinder goes down, the vacuum sucks the intake open for the carburetor, right? That's it. And a one wire from the magneto to the spark plug. And when the flywheel comes around, it trips the magneto and it fires the spark plug. That's it. So these guys are working on this thing, and they can't get it to run. It will not run. Tried everything they could do, and it will not run. And I'm looking at it and going, well, why don't you change the spark plug? Well, it's brand new. Let's get it. Why don't you change the spark plug? That's not what's wrong with it. Okay, whatever. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about these engines other than they're pretty darn simple, right? You give them a couple of pushes and they pop. You know, they fire and they go four rotations and they pop again. So they call them Poppin' Johnnies, I guess. So they mess with it and they retime it. They change everything around. They work on this thing for 2 weeks. Finally, they take the brand new spark plug out and put in the 40-year-old spark plug, and it runs. Because the brand new spark plug, which is, you know, I mean, and folks, it's not a little spark plug. It's big. It's like, you know, it's like the thread on it's like the size of a quarter. It's huge. It's about, you know, 2 inches long, 3 inches long. Big old spark plug with a cap on it. And the 40-year-old spark plug would run, but the brand new spark plug wouldn't. Because under, you know, we're talking about an engine that has maybe, on a good day, has 6-to-1 compression ratio. 6-to-1, you know, I mean, barely even has any compression at all. And because it was just enough to short out internally on the spark plug. One item, one electrical item in the entire motor. Everything else is mechanical. The magneto is mechanical. You know, it's basically a coil in there that you flip through. You know, there's hardly anything can go wrong with it. You could change them. I think they did change that, and it didn't help. There's a solid wire for the spark plug. It's not like an insulator. It's just a solid wire that goes up there. It's not like we're worried about radio interference, right? And the spark plug. And that's it. I mean, they messed with the carburetor. They messed with everything. Yeah, ethered it, did everything. Couldn't make it run. The spark plug was the failure component. A brand new spark plug. And we're talking about it on an engine with one spark plug. And it killed it. And so when Brian talks about the parts that come out brand new, it's not just new car parts. It's every car part. Why was it bad? Who knows? You don't know why. I'm pretty sure that the manufacturer, which is a reputable manufacturer, it wasn't like it was, you know, said Chinese labels, symbols on it, right? It was from a reputable manufacturer that has built spark plugs for 100 years probably. yet it failed. Why? Because the quality control isn't there? I don't know. Is it because they couldn't make it right? I couldn't tell you. What I know is that the part was bad and it was brand new, and it happens all the time, and there is nothing more frustrating than trying to fix a car and find out that the part you just put on is bad, because it can't be bad. I just replaced it. It's brand new. There is nothing that will irritate you to death realizing you just spent money on a part and did the diagnosis, did the labor to install it, because it's like it didn't just jump on the car for free, right? It didn't just say, oh, hi, I'm a brand new part, and I come with it. Doesn't, you know, when you buy it, it doesn't come installation included. It comes, you know, minus installation. That's your part. You get to install it. So however much work you just went to, busted your knuckles, you get to do it all over again.
That's what's so frustrating. I mean, I'm at a point, you know, I look at every day and how much time I have in the day. My time is valuable. It's very valuable. You know, like I say, I'm on the back half of time. Been there, done it, got the T-shirt. But my time today is more valuable than it ever, ever has been. And to waste my time because of a defective part is extremely frustrating, because it's not productive. And what can you do? You know, I mean, this isn't just aftermarket parts. I mean, what was it? I had a GM vehicle. It was a body control module. I had to get three to get one that worked. Three. I mean, the first one failed because in the middle of programming, General Motors' website crashed right in the middle of programming. So that's done, because we're relying on the internet and their website. Instead of back in the day when they'd send you a disk and you could load it into your PC, direct connect to the PC, direct connect to the vehicle, and there was no walking on eggshells. Well, everything has changed. All the programming now is done through the internet, through their website, which we have to buy subscriptions on a single-time, one-use basis and or the annual subscription, which is extremely expensive, which I buy for the vehicles that I know I'm going to work on the most. But I mean, we're all relied on this. But like I say, with that body control module, I buy one, the internet crashes, it's done, it's toast. I buy the second one, it won't communicate at all, you can't even program it. I buy the third one, voila, everything's great. But how much time did those three parts waste of mine? And what value? I mean, that's very valuable time to me. And then not to mention, I can't charge the customer for the time that was wasted because of the faulty part. Not productive. And that's the challenges that we face today. Very, very annoying. But this is the world we live in.
Yeah, the world. We need to jump in some of our advertisers here before we run out of time, Brian.
Yeah, quickly, Automotive Specialist is located at 3611 West Ina Road. That's Automotive Specialist. We're in Northwest Tucson, located right behind the Checker O'Reilly Auto Parts building. It's Automotive Specialist. Our phone number is 572-1734. Our website is automotivespecialistaz.com. You can go there, read about us, or you can just type in test first, don't guess, and it'll take you to our website. Our address is 3611 West Ina Road. Give us a call. Take it away, Jim.
All right. Parker Automotive, 5101 East Speedway, 520-323-1966. Right there on the corner of Rosemont Speedway, the northeast corner, folks. northeast corner, not the southeast corner. Don't go over south. Well, you can go over southeast corner, but go over and drop your car off at Parker and see Scott and those guys over there. Simmons Automotive, our patriarch. Jerry, he's on his way to the airport. Hopefully he's made it there perfect. 3743 South Country Club. Go see Wade down there and the guys. 520-884-0217. 520-884-0217. And Simmons Driveline Specialty. The guys down there can fix up your drive shafts. Spectrum Minor Road Collision. Spectrum Minor Road Collision. Go see Javier over there at 4425 West Ina. 4425 West Ina Road. 520-744-4454. 520-744-4454. That's Javier over at Ina Road Collision. Murrow Automotive. Murrow's Automotive. Right down here at Dodge and Ajo. Right down the street from me. Go see those guys. 520-884-7202. They're open on Saturday. They're open today. Lynn's Auto Brokerage. Lynn's Auto Brokerage and Desert West RV. Lynn's Auto Brokerage. We'll go see Brian up there. 2101 North Stone. 2101 North Stone. 520-628-7500. 520-628-7500. And LynnsAutoBrokerage.com. And, of course, Brian Fuller, he got his in there. Mr. Test First, Don't Guess. And lastly, me, Frontier Towing, 520-748-1100. So whatever you guys need to get towed today or transport or all kinds of weird stuff you want, kind of the weird stuff we do some days, you'd be amazed. It comes off. But anyways, I think we're out of time, Brian. It was a pleasure having you on, as always.
Yep, thanks for having me on. It was fun. I mean, have a good weekend.
Everybody have a great weekend. Be safe out there. Don't drink or drive. Don't text and drive.